Okay, so this is Adil, once again, tuning in from the northern hemisphere of the globe. The humanist superpower and the socialist mecca of the world, also called Sweden. And today, guys, I have some powerful stuff to share with you. Because today I'm gonna tell you the story of how I became a nationalist. And I want to share this story because I believe that, you know, it will very effectively show why our way is the right way and the only way. And, you know, I believe it's a story that should get out there, and I also want to share sort of my perspective on things, and I also want to give you the chance to, you know, get to know me a bit better. So, yeah, first of all, ever since I was a kid, I've known that I'm an ethnic mix. As I said in my introduction show, my mother is from Finland and my father is from Turkey, actually. He has roots on the Greek island of Crete, which is the biggest Greek island, which used to be under Ottoman rule, and that's when some Cretans converted and became quote-unquote Turkish, I guess, and who were sent to Turkey later because they were quote-unquote Muslim. So you see, I grew up in this duality with two different perspectives on culture. And since I was a very small child, this knowledge has been a part of my identity. I knew very early on that my ancestry was foreign from Sweden, right? Which made me ponder about identity. And I came to realize I'm sort of stuck in between these two clashing civilizations at the same time. You know, if you don't conform into a ruthless identity of materialism and popular culture and disregard nationhood as something trivial, as most people do, you know, these are things that you begin to question. So, basically, I had to deconstruct and reconstruct myself. And, you know, I grew up in this immigrant hood, and from the start, I almost exclusively identified with the immigrants, you know. But eventually ended up distancing myself from that ghetto culture, you know. Whether it was listening to degenerate hip-hop, you know, talking, walking like a wog, and all that, you know, I just grew away from it and embraced my Nordic side and, yeah, basically adapted myself naturally, you know. So my father, he came to Sweden from Turkey during the 70s as a part of the, you know, labor immigration wave. And, you know, he came here without any political motives, any religious beliefs or unwillingness to adapt. You know, this was still a time when immigration to Sweden was at a pretty low level compared to now, of course. And, you know, he came from a secular family, and he came here to earn a living. You know, he became a business owner and worked his ass off for this country for more than 30 years. And my mother, she came to Sweden with her parents, who also came here for work. So I have this working class background, and my grandfather came to Sweden before that, actually, already in the 30s as a so-called Finnish war child. And when he grew up, he returned back to Finland. He met his wife and later brought his family back to Sweden. So you see, Finns are generally more nationalist-minded than Swedes. You know, they are not as exposed to you know, American popular culture, for example, because they have this, you know, language shield. Their language is very different from Swedish, which is a Germanic language and has more in common with English, right? And Finns also have gone through war in recent times, which, you know, have made them a bit more immune to multiculturalism. And at the same time, they are also the best integrated immigrant group in Sweden. You know, Finnish used to be the second biggest minority language in Sweden. And Sweden had a lot of, you know, Finnish working immigrants. But yeah, recently the Finnish language got surpassed by Arabic, actually, as the biggest minority language. And you see, these Middle Eastern African immigrants, they're basically impossible to integrate in bigger numbers, right? You see, I mean, not even the ones who was born here integrate. I mean, of course, second generation immigrants are sort of integrated. I mean, I myself am, but you still have a lot of them who don't integrate. You know, the majority of immigrants in Sweden come from shattered countries, you know, nothing to return to, and they are very materialist, you know. They always have smartphones, cars, and new shoes and all that, you know, which makes them, you know, adapt this tribalist behavior. You know, they start claiming ownership of Sweden under the veil of leftist humanism, right? Yet it's impossible to adapt them into Swedish secular society. So they just gather up in these no-go zones, you know, and create their parallel societies there. Yet they complain about that and, you know, start riots and begin burning cars. And then, you know, you have some of the newer wave of refugees who are placed in the rural areas. And they become fucking furious and afraid of the forest. So you see, these are desert people. They are desert people with a materialistic pursuit, you know. And yeah, you see, my parents never raised me under some sort of ideological view. You know, they didn't teach me anything about religion or politics. You know, my father never answered me if I asked him whether he was a Muslim. He just said those things. Those are things I can ponder about later in life myself. And today I know my father is very secular and anti-Islam, you know, and I remember he was very unhappy about me having so much immigrant friends. Because the thing is, immigrants are usually also very hostile towards each other. You know, my schools and my neighborhood were filled with immigrants, and he didn't like that. So not only are foreigners a threat to Swedes, I mean, they are also very hostile among themselves. And they have no solidarity to anyone other than their own immediate tribe. You know, they don't give a shit about preserving Swedish culture or, you know, Swedish people. They have no sense for that whatsoever, you know. And an example of the mentality I'm talking about is when you are in Turkey, for example, or a southern European country for that matter, people will be very hospitable towards their own neighbors, their own relatives. You know, they'll bring each other food every day, etc. But as soon as a stranger enters the picture, they will immediately, you know, become skeptical, because they have a natural defense towards this. You know, after a long history of tribal warfare, right? And the cucked out Swedes, they lack this kind of natural tribal defense mechanism. Because they are very individualistic. They live in this shoebox apartments, and they are materialistically satisfied, and they don't care much about other things than their own individual pursuits, right? And they are therefore much more vulnerable to globalization. And this is a well-known fact, of course, you know, among the powers to be. So it's not a coincidence that Northern Europe is the main target of immigration, both economically and socially speaking. You see, because no one organizes society as properly as Nordics do, and no one is as inclusive either. And this form of Nordic socialism, which in its essence is very different from international Marxist socialism, is only compatible with nationalism, you know, because you can't have open border socialism, which pushes down wages, increases the population and unemployment, you know, decreases the share of capital, decreases solidarity and trust and what have you, you know, just a recipe for catastrophe. And the left in Sweden, and particularly the social democrats, they sort of believe that they own this phenomenon of socialism, but one day they will, you know, have to realize that nationalism is necessary to keep some sort of welfare, because globalization basically means suicide for these countries. And that's why I'm also sort of hopeful with this whole Trump phenomenon, because if he becomes a president, I think that he might be able to, you know, lead the societal discourse in a positive direction, right? Even for Europe, because Europe and particularly Sweden is a you know, an American lapdog, right? And judging by what Donald Trump says about trade and all that, well, that's positive. It's a reason to be optimistic. But yeah, anyway, the cultural and personal differences between my mother and father eventually led to divorce. So you know, my family is an example, really, on how multiculturalism leads to confusion, alienation, and cultural degeneracy, really. Because, you know, I just stood there then and asked myself, who am I? Because I had no, you know, solid ground to stand on. And then I had to figure that out. And, well, now I'm here. Despite having all the reasons to give up and fail or go after some, you know, individualistic pursuit, right? So the fundament for a harmonic society in line with nature is an ethnically and culturally homogeneous society. You know, I have self-distance and maturity enough to say that. And the leftists, they have created a Sweden with some of the highest suicidal rates in the world, if I'm not mistaken. You know, men and women are taking their lives, especially men, because of lack of power through discipline. So the growing trend of divorce, it's really nothing but a result of lack of stability, lack of common ground, discipline. I mean, it's a result of feminism, promiscuity, and the lack of real men. That's always what we come back to, right? And there is no point in intellectualizing about it again. So you see, I'm a first person witness to the dangers of multiculturalism. I mean, I grew up in an immigrant suburb with working class parents, alienated from Swedes in Sweden. And I witnessed the failure of integration and Swedish politics from a first person point of view. And now I have a personal vendetta with these motherfuckers, you know, destroying our countries and communities. So today I've become this individual who sort of can effectively change between identities, perspectives, languages, you know, to suit the social context. I mean, I understand human psychology and different cultures. You know, I've become this kind of flexible individual, yet very much rooted in my culture and heritage. And I'm going to use that against these social Marxist scumbags, you know, because they can't use the racist card against me. I'm immune against that, you know, those bastards who preach for a homogenized popular culture, you know, advocating so-called multiculturalism, which is nothing really but a ruthless melting pot unified by degeneracy, right? I'm sick of it, really. And, you know, when I grew older, I realized Europeans are ethnically very similar, and that they will always be contrasted by the growing immigration, right, from other continents, because they look and they behave differently. You know, I myself developed a Swedish identity in my early teens, but you know, today I have an increasingly hard time identifying with the modern Swedes who are really, really cocked out. So what I want to say is that, you know, being white, it's not just a skin color. I mean, it's also a mentality. And genetics only takes you so far, right? I mean, you can be a white person, but you can be totally culturally degenerated, right? So even I'm not ethnically Swedish, I see myself as much more Swedish than you know, the average cocked out Swede today. And when it comes to myself, I have had to be very holistic and try to find a common nominator for my own identity, right? As a Northern European and Mediterranean mix. And, you know, since I've always been traditionally minded, and also very skeptical of Islam, well, becoming a nationalist just came naturally for me. And to side with the Swedish nationalism, European nationalism, it was just, well, I saw it as a duty, basically, as a moral person, right? So yeah, do you see, comrades, why our path is the right path? I mean, we have the fucking nature and the truth on our side. And I'm fucking destined for this cause, I'm telling you. You know, as a mediator between the East and the West. And I have a personal vendetta with these liberals. You know, I grew up in a scattered country, in a scattered, divorced family. And I have to build myself back up again from start now. And I want to build a fucking army here with you guys. So, yeah, I think I'm gonna go for a break now. And I'm gonna have you listen to some Finnish folk music. And I'll be back soon. Thank you. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the song and that it empowered you. I'm sure it did. But anyway, I wanted to talk about the importance of changing our rhetorics here in Sweden. You know, as I've now made it clear why our path is the right path, I want to make clear, very, very clear, that these leftists, they are the most dangerous people in the world. You know, make no mistake about it. It's not immigrants or Muslims, you know. It's these fucking leftists, man. And we should not give these assholes breathing space. You know, don't even debate with these assholes. Because they'll drag you down to their level. Because they are not mentally adults. I mean, they're just like these so-called moderate Muslims who refuse to criticize their own religion, right? And to take responsibility for their community's actions. And in the same way, you know, these leftists, they have problematized all aspects of life. Apart from their own, these fucking children. So you see, our rhetorics, it should not be exclusively aimed against the immigrants or the goddamn boogeyman, you know, because this is the narrative right now here in Sweden. You know, nationalists are creating some sort of dystopic narrative for war, right? When we should really primarily aim at our politicians and ourselves, our men and women, and try to initiate a cultural revolution from grassroots, which is also happening.
You know, it was only a matter of time before someone came along and said, you know, what the fuck is going on here? What kind of fucking kindergarten is this? And just instinctively distanced himself from the boogeyman chasers. It was the same thing for me before I came to PDD. I was like, what the fuck, these guys are obsessed by the boogeyman. An entire fucking community chasing their own tail. And then I came to PTD and here was a guy trying to break loose from all that so that we can strike from a position of power instead. And you know, I heard all this talk about the boogeyman and I was like, yeah, that's a term we should coin here. And I think for every true mature leader among the movement, you know, this eventually becomes the case. I mean, do I dismiss the boogeyman? No, I don't. I mean, I'm very much aware of the boogeyman question. I mean, do you want to know my views on the boogeyman? Well, I better not speak it out loud. I better not. But it has become a pathology, you see. Basically a Stockholm syndrome. I mean, what are you trying to break loose from? Confront yourself instead, your own fears. Do you think you're fucking perfect? What makes you better than the boogeyman? Let the Dukes and the McDonald's take care of the boogeyman. The intellectual professors, right? I mean, who the hell are you? Well, you're the one who should make our men great again.
But the boogeyman, they're only thinking of themselves and their community.
Well, of course they are. Why aren't you?
Well, the immigrants are flooding here.
Well, of course they are. Why shouldn't they? This is not a cycle where you'll be handed a fucking napkin because you believe there is a boogeyman in your closet. We don't even have a fucking military left in Sweden. Yet where is the movement targeting our men? I mean, not only the leftists are overgrown children, right? Our own men are too. And the leftists are dangerous because they have the power. And they're saying that Sweden is safer than ever, right? There's less violence than ever in history, they say. Well, of course there is. Where are the fucking Vikings? I mean, is it supposed to be a good thing people have become domesticated PlayStation soldiers? An entire generation of movie-watching men who don't even have to serve in the army anymore. And you think they're gonna wake up because you mentioned the boogeyman? No, they need authority, man. I needed authority. And this side is more attractive to men than anything else. And you know, this site has realized the value of mainstreaming the message. You know, this is a tactic that the left has used for decades, you know, this subversive tactic. And then here's a great quote. Here's a great quote. "He who desires or wishes to reform the condition of a city and wishes that it be accepted and that it be able to maintain itself to everyone's satisfaction is forced to retain at least the shadow of ancient modes, so that it might seem to the people that order has not changed, though in fact the new orders are completely alien to those of the past. For the universality of men feed as much on appearance as on reality. Indeed, in many cases they are moved more by the things which seem than by those which are. And this much should be observed by all who wish to eliminate an ancient way of life in a city and reduce it to a new way of life. One ought, since new things alter the minds of men, to see to it that these alterations retain as much as the ancient as possible. And if the magistrates change from those of old in number, authority, and term of office, they ought at least retain the name Machiavelli." And I guess you recognize this, right? This is what the left has done for decades, and it's the subversive tactic that will eventually let them, you know, legalize pedophilia and you know, necrophilia and incest and whatnot, right? So does this mean that we should be soft? Well, no, it doesn't, because our men are sick and tired of cultural Marxism already. I mean, we're not aiming for the faggots, you know, walking around with the slim fit jeans and fake glasses, right? I mean, we're aiming for men, but we need to trick them to the right message. So the question is, how do you break through the ice and make it attractive? And well, we do have the answers here. And you know, cultural Marxists, they will call you crazy for imagining a world without liberalism, right? But look at our fucking history, man. I mean, if you're not connected to your history, you are nothing but a naked ape. That's what you are. You're just a naked ape running around playing wise guy. I mean, look at the fucking Renaissance and how beautiful everything was, and compare it to modern day architecture. Now, is that what you call progress? You know, humanity is really at its lowest point ever in history. And history is not fucking linear, by the way. It's cyclical. And we are the one who, you know, need to turn the tide upwards here. So we have to adopt higher values, right? And we have to attack the materialist worldview relentlessly. I mean, our men has lost all hope and been tricked into hating God, you know. Looking on romanticism and beauty as something, you know, gay, right? They'll say that's gay, and they'll call themselves atheists and think they are cool, right? But I tell you what, screw atheism. You know, atheism makes you gullible. It makes you believe in materialistic endeavors, and it makes you believe in the media. You know, humans need authority, and only a few selected people can be atheists, true atheists, you know, really, without creating this other dogmatic belief systems for themselves. So, you know, value your culture and think holistically, even if you don't like Christianity, for example. I mean, go to the fucking church and pray. Don't go to the fucking therapist. I mean, go to your local priest and go for a fucking confession, if you have the balls for it. You know, I spoke to a priest once and I told him I'm sickened. I'm sickened that people don't go to church on Sundays anymore and have abandoned these fantastic sacred buildings of,
European high culture and architecture for the fucking telly. The fucking television. So yeah, let's move on to the next topic, and the last topic, which is the information and performance society and the sickness it breeds. Exactly, you heard that right. The information and performance society and the sickness it breeds. You know, we have to slow down, guys. The reason I talked about introversion in my previous episode is that the lack of, you know, calmness in our society is really leading us into a new form of barbarism. You know, we live in a society which is obviously sick, and the symptoms are immigration, the sickening popular culture, the epitome of burning yourself out, you know, and the fucking crashing of our schools. You know, this disciplined humans have been replaced with these performance workers whose lives are reduced to work, you know, to some sort of animal lab rat. So what we do here is not work, right? I mean, it's work and play. That's what I want to call it. It's work and play. You know, the boogeyman chasers, they are all play. But this here, this is work and play. And yeah, you know, the hyperactivity in our society is reducing man into some sort of hyperactive multitasking animal, you know. So I want to encourage you to, you know, adopt the mindset of focus. Because to be a human is to contemplate, you know, and all culture demands deep focus, which has been made impossible in our superficial society where people have a very, you know, short attention span on the expense of culture and art. And, you know, I myself was very mentally damaged by too much information. You know, too much watching TV, reading news, too much big impressions of world news like, well, you know, earthquakes in Japan, tsunamis in Thailand, whatever. You know, these things drains you. We're not meant to, you know, take in this much information, and you have to be local, as our forefathers. You know, be local. You know, it's time to raise up, goddammit. Be local, and change yourself and the world around you. You know, fuck the rest. And don't fucking tell me not to swear. Don't do that. You know, a filthy society requires adequate words to describe it. A filthy society requires adequate words to describe it. And the day we have a decent society again, I will stop swearing. But until then, swear words will have to serve their purpose. How else are you going to get that energy out? I mean, swearing is a way of uncharging yourself. I mean, language is very deep and full of symbolism. And that's probably a topic that I'll cover here also sometime. You know, we should be a new fucking philosophical school for our men. I mean, school doesn't teach you anything. This is your school. And this is the rise of fascism. Right? They hate that word. This is the rise of fascism. And, you know, it's really funny. About a year ago, I did this test on a site called politicalcompass.org. And there they have, you know, one classic left-to-right economical scale, which is contrasted by a vertical social scale, which has authoritarian fascism on the top and, you know, libertarian anarchism on the bottom. And based on their questions, about a year ago, I clustered right under the authoritarian scale, you know, socially. And I did that test again a few days ago, and I have radically climbed up towards fascism, I'm telling you. And I almost ended up besides Stalin and the guys, you know. but, you know, that's really the route we should be heading here. I mean, we should become, you know, leaders to our men. And, you know, on the economical scale, I kind of lean towards the left, I guess. So it's really funny how they always call nationalists right-wing extremists somehow, right? So these scales can be really delusional sometimes. But yeah, anyway, thanks for listening, guys, and I hope you enjoyed the ride. Stay strong for so long.